All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. No Chris Newmarket today. We're going to keep it on the short side. I'm traveling and I haven't had a chance to record the longer version of this podcast. So we'll just bring you an interview I did with Greg Roach. He's the CEO of Distal Motion. He'll also be a speaker at Device Talks Boston. We'll have a lot of surgical robotics at Device Talks Boston. We'll have Distal Motion. We'll start us off. We'll have CMR Surgical. I'll be talking with executives there for an opening keynote address on day two. We'll have Intuitive. We'll have Stryker. We'll have Quantum. And Medtronic will end the show with a joint keynote between our two events, the Device Talks Boston event and a robotics summit and expo event. So lots of great surgical robotics talk at Device Talks Boston. We'll have other talk as well. The Shockwave news, particularly timely because we'll be talking with the folks at Fastwave and AVS, which are two other intravascular lithotripsy companies, IVL companies that will suddenly emerge as the independent leaders in this space. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about pulse field ablation, orthopedics, and much, much more. So go to boston.devicetalks.com to register. Be great to see you there. Don't forget to use the code DTWeekly25 when you do that. You'll save 25% off the price. We'll have an opening reception on April 30th, so it'll be great to see everybody there. And lots of other receptions going on around the Seaport area. So if you attend, make sure you ask about those, and I'll let you know what's going on. You'll also probably see them on social media as well. The hashtag for Device Talks Boston is #DTBoston2024. So keep an eye on that hashtag on LinkedIn. So once again, we'll get into this conversation I had with Greg Roach. Greg Roach has been working in surgical robotics for a decade. He led Zimmer Biomet's ROSA efforts, and now he's CEO of Distal Motion, which is the developer of Dexter, which is a smaller profile soft tissue robot. We'll learn about Dexter. We'll learn about surgical robotics. We'll learn about Greg's MedTech career, including some time at Stryker, and he had some interesting comments about the Stryker culture, some positive comments. And that's it. All right. So once again, join us at Device Talks in Boston on May 1st and 2nd at the Boston Convention and Exhibition Center. Join us on Tuesday for our final Device Talks Tuesdays of the month with Freudenberg. It's going to be a great conversation. And I am actually on the road recording our newest podcast. I am in Irvine, California, and I'll leave it there. I've kind of hinted at this podcast before and shown some photos on social media, but I just like being cryptic. So keep an ear out for a new podcast that should be rolling out in June. All right, folks, let's get this podcast started. Well, Greg Roach, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Tom.
I'm excited to have you and Distal Motion at Device Talks Boston. It's coming up in a couple of weeks. Unbelievable how time has flown.
But, I agree.
But looking forward to hearing your story. And it's coming, I think, at a really, really interesting time. 2024 has just it seems increasingly like a pivotal year for surgical robotics. We've got some FDA approvals. As we're recording this, the Karl Storz Ascensus news kind of just came out. Of course, Da Vinci 5. Lots going on. So I want to understand where Distal Motion fits into all of this. But first, I want to understand how you found a fit in the med tech industry. What was your what drew you to the industry, and what was your first connection?
Yeah, so believe it or not, I started my career after law school in telecommunications, so in tech. But this is, I tell my kids, this is before businesses used the internet for data transport.
Yeah.
Was involved in really kind of that big movement where internet piping was starting to be used for connectivity between businesses. And I got a call from a good friend about a role at Stryker. And honestly, at that time, I didn't know much about it, but I knew probably after the second interview that I wanted to be in medical device.
Interesting.
And so I started in their endoscopy business and you know, I've had obviously multiple roles since then, which we can talk about, but it was really someone coaxing and convincing me to just say that you need to look at this. And as soon as I understood that you could be so connected to the patient, you know, being in a fast paced, still highly technical environment, it was the right place for me.
I've had a few interviews with former Stryker folks talk about, and just sort of reference and refer to in passing, the Stryker culture. What is that culture? What did it mean to you, and what kind of foundation did it lay?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the easiest thing to say is I would have my kids work there.
Okay.
You know, I think it's one from a sales and marketing perspective, it's probably one of the better places in medical device to get that type of training. It's not for the faint of heart.
Okay.
You know, it's performance oriented. You need to hit numbers and do the things that you say. But again, I think they invest a lot in their people. I do think they have an incredible culture. Mm-hmm. I think they really focus on the employee and, you know, I wouldn't be here without, you know, the 8 years that I spent there and the training that I got and the investment they made in me. So I'm, you know, super appreciative of that.
Interesting. Well, your first statement says a lot about having your kids work there. You moved over to Zimmer Biomet in 2012. I mean, a competitor, direct competitor of sorts. What went into that decision and how difficult was it?
Yeah, well, it was incredibly hard. I mean, you know, I always say I worked with a lot of great friends at Stryker. I mean, and truly, that's not just saying that I did and still have, you know, those friends to this day. So it was really difficult. Maybe two things, really unique. So I live in Cleveland, Ohio, so obviously not a ton of med tech. Mm-hmm. I know we have Steris and a few others, but not a ton of med tech in Cleveland. So there was an opportunity. It was a large sales or building a sales organization, which would have been difficult to do at Stryker. You know, they had a lot of mature businesses. So I got to build one from scratch, from a commercial perspective. And it was also in my hometown. Mm-hmm. So I always say it was half personal and then half career. So I was able to keep my family in the same place, but also, you know, really challenge myself from a career perspective and get to build an organization, which we did over my first 5 years at Zimmer.
A little off topic. Do you have any thoughts on what it would take to build out medical devices a bit in Cleveland? Certainly it's growing and there's a lot going on, Case Western and obviously Cleveland Clinic, but, you know, Minnesota has Mayo, Boston has Mass General. Cleveland Clinic is one, two or three, you know, depends where you live, I guess. Have you given any thought to what it would take to get a medtech industry to kind of grow there?
Well, it's funny you say that. I actually, the Cleveland Clinic has a very interesting innovations program.
Yes, and you're right.
You know, so like this incubation program, which I think it is helpful. It's helpful because of obviously their brand and University Hospitals is there. So we have two really reputable hospitals in a very small space. I actually moved one of Zimmer's businesses up into the Cleveland market. We were very far south, actually south of Canton, Ohio, and we moved it up into Cleveland. And I think still they have 130, 140 people there. But I, you know what? It's probably going to take a combination of, it's not just industry. People have to have a reason to go there. And I think Cleveland is progressive. But I think, you know, people would have to be very focused on it, making sure that they get those companies. I actually think from industry, it would be a great place to be, just given the natural partnerships you would have with, you know, world renowned institutions.
Sure.
In Cleveland. You know, the only thing that I think is a negative is probably January to April.
Minnesota's found a way around that. Boston as well, for that matter. But yeah, no, there's a lot going on there. Our company that owns Device Docs is based there as well. So, familiar with it and excellent. All right. Just thanks for that. So I've opened this up by saying we're in a critical year for surgical robotics. You became global president of robotics and technology at Zimmer Biomet, which of course has a robot, ROSA robot, which was one of the earlier robotic systems to kind of move into the clinical space. So you may counter and say, what are you talking about, Salemi? You know, we already had a lot of pivotal years. Look at Zimmer Biomet at what they did. Look at Stryker at what they did. how did you first question, how did you find your way into the robotics platform? And talk a bit about your experience leading the ROSA team.
Yeah, so I asked. I guess it's a simple.
All right.
This is one of those.
That's a good lesson.
I got what I asked for. You know, I ran a capital business, a capital oriented business. So I ran the surgical business at Zimmer prior to picking up robotics, which is the adjacent capital and technology around the orthopedic episode of care. And when we acquired ROSA, it was obviously a neuro robot with a plan to take it into total knee, hip, and they just launched shoulder. So I went and asked. Had a great conversation with our CEO at the time and was lucky enough to get what I asked for. Mm-hmm. And then lucky, probably more importantly, you know, thanks to current leadership, lucky enough to get the resources to do what we needed to do to really build that program. You know, and I think you probably know, being close to the space, it's one thing to have a great product, but there's a lot behind support, mm-hmm. you know, commercialization support from a clinical and technical perspective. You know, Zimmer really fed the program and allowed us to do that globally over the first 3 or 4 years.
So what was the, what allowed you, or what did you learn that helped you win over surgeons and win over hospitals? What were some of the winning qualities that allowed you to compete in the space? Again, you're going against your friends at Stryker with their system. Yeah. What was the knockout blow for you guys?
Yeah.
What's important to surgeons?
Yeah. So I think, look, with all of these technologies, a lot of times companies create a technology and then try to find the value, mm-hmm. right? I think we realized very quickly as we were in development that it's not necessarily the robot itself. It's the information that's provided on the robot that makes the difference. So what I saw in my, you know, time at Zimmer is surgeons were really starting to look at how they performed a total knee. You know, they had all this information around balancing. You know, I saw more soft tissue preservation. So to me, and again, that's not to say that Zimmer is the only company that has those qualities, but that is true value. Mm-hmm. You know, when someone changes the way that they balance a knee, to me, that's telling me that the technology is lending to that. The other thing that I learned is the importance of ease of integration into workflow. Mm-hmm. And that's where I thought ROSA had a really nice value prop. We did a lot of it in the ASC environment, which I think was one of the nice drivers for that ROSA platform. So just, you know, I always say some of the technologies you have to integrate into the technology of the robot. And this is, again, maybe a shameless plug for distal motion as well. but ROSA and Dexter, these technologies are implemented into the workflow of the surgeon. Mm-hmm. And that's a much different thing. So you have faster uptick, it's easier for the staff. You don't have the complexities of integration into a surgical workflow or learning a new one. So those were really, you know, some of the big themes and key points that I pulled out of that opportunity.
Interesting. So did you get the robotics bug? Because then you moved over to be CEO at, is it Avatera Medical? Is that, you were CEO there. Talk a bit about that transition. Why you got a comfy spot at Zimmer Biomet. You're living in Cleveland. Working in Cleveland. You got everything you asked for. What led to the move?
Yeah, maybe again, a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, I will say that Zimmer was incredibly supportive of helping me with that transition and was supportive afterwards, you know, because running a startup is never, ever easy. You know, again, I was really blessed to have some very great leaders there that helped me along the journey. But, you know, what I would say is, look, what I identified, the soft tissue market needs competition. You know, we obviously have, you know, one dominant player in the space. Mm-hmm. Avatera had a great product in my diligence, great product, great team. And, you know, really thought it was something new for me. So I, you know, running a business within a Fortune 300 company and running a startup are two different things. And so for me, I think it was like kind of this natural move. to try something different. And again, I do have the robotics bug obviously, because I'm sitting in a robotics company now. I think I'm all in. But I truly believe these technologies are going to change the way that we do medicine, in a number of different ways. But it was really the next evolution in my career.
Talk a moment about that difference of working in a bigger company and a smaller company. I've done both. Smaller's hard, but I like it more. You just get to influence more, and you get to have more say in decisions. What is it? What are the differences between the two? And you mentioned your kids earlier, so I'll bring him. And what would you tell your kids about, choosing a small company over a big company? Where's a better place to kind of build a career out?
Yeah. So, I think Big Co first is great.
Yeah.
Because we're never going to have the resources they do to invest. I mean, we invest here at Distal Motion in development and our employees, but you certainly can't do it at the scale of a Stryker or a Zimmer or of a Johnson & Johnson or Medtronic. So, starting there and learning, I would say the fundamentals on, how to sell and how to lead. And, there's so many different things that they can offer and provide. And look, how to influence in a matrix. And, mm-hmm. Right. It's not easy. I always say, I had to go ask for money within Zimmer, right? That's something that you'd have to do. We obviously did M&A and there was a process there, but it's obviously much different when you're asking people to pull money out of their own wallet. Mm-hmm. And that, so that's the difference. The speed of decision-making obviously is an advantage where I sit today, mm-hmm. right? So if I have a meeting, we can make a decision and execute. And sometimes in a matrix organization, that may be a little bit more difficult to do. So, and you see that sometimes, I think, when, some of the larger companies adopt technology, it doesn't always work because I think you would agree, there's some benefits to being in an extremely nimble environment, both from an R&D perspective and a decision-making perspective.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the move over to Distal Motion. It's interesting because I noted that I think we finally have a generation of experienced surgical robotics executives who have succeeded at one level and are taking it to another level. You'll be at Device Talks Boston. Bertina Hume of Quantum Surgical is going to be there as well. He's another repeat into the surgical robotics space. We're seeing folks from Aura starting companies. So we're seeing sort of surgical robotics startups 2.0. So talk about that for a moment. Do you feel that as well, like that we have a really deep bench now of people who have done a version of this at least once? And what does that mean for the surgical robotics market?
Yeah, well, winning and losing, no matter what it is, you're going to learn a lot.
Yeah.
Right. And, I think if I look back at all my experience, it's the culmination of that makes me the right person for this role. So to your point, I think as people get more and more experience in the space, the better qualified they are to lead, to lead and run a company in this space. Mm-hmm. It is not easier for the faint of heart. And there are a lot of lessons, that you can learn from prior experiences that you can, I think that takes the burden away from maybe that learning curve in the second and third opportunity. Mm-hmm. So for me, I always say to people, if I wasn't at Avatera, I wouldn't have been, potentially the right person for Distal Motion. I learned a lot being in soft tissue the last 2 years and, much different platforms, much, much different product, but some of the learnings around the industry were the same. And I think it's going to be the same. Is the bench deep yet? Maybe not. Mm-hmm. You're seeing some, but I think it's going to take a few more years before we start to see, what I would call a deep bench and, executive leadership in robotics, because there's just not that many companies mm-hmm. yet that are commercialized and really having a ton of success. And, so I think we're probably 2 or 3 years away mm-hmm. from really having what I would say is a comprehensive bench. So, I look at my leadership team, having those people ready to take, different roles and run companies and run businesses. I think we're getting closer every day, but maybe not there yet.
Interesting. And it's an interesting contrast between soft tissue and hard tissue. How different are the two for surgical robotics? Is it 180 degrees different, 90 degrees different, 45 degrees different? How do you see that?
Yeah, it's slightly different. Mm-hmm. I think orthopedic robotics is a bit more of a competitive space. I mean, right? You see now, J&J, Smith & Nephew, Stryker, Zimmer all have at least some form of robot or navigation device. And if you look at soft tissue, I think it's a bit more challenging. You don't see that in the companies that play in soft tissue. You mentioned the Asensus, Storz, LOI. You really don't see that yet. I mean, you know, there's not been broad scale adoption yet with Hugo, Otava's not on the market yet. Mm-hmm. And so you still kind of have this one player and then maybe some tertiary players. And really in the US that funnel even gets smaller. Mm-hmm. So, I think soft tissue is a bit harder.
Interesting.
And you have the complexity of multiple types of surgeries.
Yep.
Right. So it's not just a total knee or a total hip or a shoulder. You know, those are three procedures. Within GYN, you know, there's probably 20 different robotic procedures that you do. So set up, port place, you know, these are things that aren't maybe as complex when you get into, you know, orthopedics. The learnings are, some of them are the same though.
Yep.
How to adopt, site of care, you know, those sorts of things. I think there's a lot of similar learnings, and I really did pull a lot from my experience at Zimmer into this opportunity at Distal Motion.
All right, great stuff. Well, let's get into Distal Motion. That's what you're here to talk about. Sure. What was it about the opportunity that appealed to you in that answer? Tell us about the company and about Dexter, your robot.
Yeah, so I'm going to use one word about the product and the company that blew me away during diligence, which is maturity. Hmm. You know, being a CEO in the space, I did not realize where Distal Motion and Dexter were. This is a technology with almost 1,000 surgeries under its belt in the verticals of general surgery, urology, and gynecology. Over 35 different types of procedures, incredible leadership team, really great board shareholder mix. You know, we have a strategic on the cap table. We've got a great U.S. private equity firm. Out of the gates, I was really impressed. As I dove in, what I saw around the product maturity is this is a product from a is made for high volume surgery. So when you think of hernia, hysterectomy, all of these types of procedures where really the growth vector is in robotics right now, from a technical perspective, you can do it, but also from an economic perspective. And that's when I really got interested. So it's not that Dexter can't do the high acuity. It can. We've done almost 200 prostatectomies. A few weeks ago, we did a Whipple, you know, which on the robot was multiple hours. So we can do the complex, and I like that. But I think when you look at some of these large form factor robotic systems, there's so much technology in the system that it's really hard to flex down into the lower acuity cases from an economic perspective and a logistical perspective. They're just too big. So having this small form factor, having an open platform that allows surgeons to use the visualization of their choice, the stapling, the energy, but giving them, you know, an absolutely sound robotic system, you know, with capable instruments, you know, that allows them to work in confined space, do dissection and do suturing. It was the perfect solution. So I gave you a long-winded, maybe not one bullet point, but four, but, you know, this is really why I leapt at this opportunity. There's really a great one here.
Talk a bit or expand a bit on the point you made about the difficulty of using those. I'm sorry, I forget the term you use, but the larger systems on the lower acuity procedures. Is it that you're using an SUV or an army vehicle to go to the supermarket? Like it's just too much power, or does it actually make it technically more difficult to do those lower acuity procedures, or it's just not necessary? Like, the technology isn't justified. What is that disconnect there?
Yeah. So it's a Humvee versus a Denali or or maybe a Formula One car versus a Porsche.
Yep.
It's one you're going to drive to Starbucks. There's one you're not.
Yep.
And again, there's one lesson I learned at Avatera, which is it's very difficult to be the master of everything. So when you think about these closed platforms, you have to master visualization, advanced visualization, meaning ICG or potentially now MSI, multispectral imaging. You have the robot, you have the instruments, you have telepresence, you have data and AI. So six verticals. Even for the companies that are incredibly well funded, you could argue if you looked at even the leaders in the market, they're not number one in each of those spaces. Mm-hmm. So this is a decision that was made before us, but one of our founders and our current COO, Michael Frederick, made the decision to focus on two: the robot and the instruments. Mm-hmm. And what do we need to do great surgery? Robot and wristed instruments. So, yeah, that description aside, there's also an economic barrier, right? So when you bake in all these costs, that's raising the level of the cost of the robot, that's raising the level of the cost around the instruments. And so, at an ASC, they already have a video tower. At an ASC, they already have a stapling provider. They already have energy devices. You don't necessarily need all those things. Mm-hmm. So from a technical perspective, we've taken the opportunity to say no, and we're not going to be the master of everything. We're going to be really good at the things that we do. The second piece is we're going to provide and value to the customer, right? So make it economically feasible to do the surgeries that they need to do on the robot.
Well, let's talk a bit about the robot. I'm looking at images right now, and this is always the complication with a podcast, is trying to describe what the difference, but let's take a work at it. So I'm looking at an image, a couple of units with the arms holding the instruments. They're both on wheels.
Yep.
Am I looking at two Dextras here? Am I looking at one?
You're looking at one. So there's a very open surgeon console. Mm-hmm. It actually can flex up or down. If you think about, some of the new standing desks, you can do either one.
So open surgeon means that you're not wearing goggles. You're not looking at like an NBA ref or something like that. You're standing and operating.
You're standing or sitting and operating. You can do both.
Yeah.
The other unique part about the console is it's sterile.
Okay.
So the surgeon is scrubbed in. So you have immediate access to the patient. And if you're looking, I don't know if you're looking at just the robot or the robot over the patient, but
just the robot.
The way to just a robot. Okay, so the surgeon within seconds can get in and out of the sterile field. So when you think about training and education, when you think about someone trying to transition from laparoscopic surgery to robotics, this again, when you ease of implementation, learning curve, barriers. And safety, right? Patients sometimes have issues. That surgeon can be there instead of having to get scrubbed in, remove the robot. You can be the robotic arms are removed in less than 10 seconds. You can have full access to the patient, in under 15 seconds with the surgeon just walking over to the patient. So very unique there. The surgical arms, the one thing I'd say, they're if you look at the design, they're inverted, so they can stay very close to the patient, but they still have a wide base, which is incredibly important for stability of the instrument. So, when you see tremors or things, we built that to prevent those things from an instrument perspective. So we really took advantage of, building something stable, but not building something. Most robots kind of come over the top. So they take up much more real estate in an operating environment. And then you see that third thing, device is the scope manipulation device. So that holds the visualization or a camera of your choice, and you can manipulate that from the surgeon console.
I see. And I see now I'm looking, I see an L on one side, an R on the other. I'm guessing that's left, right. Although I don't know if it's different in Swiss.
Kilos, meters, but not left and right.
That's still fantastic.
The same. Yeah.
So I'm imagining that when you're setting up the OR, you've got a room with a table, as any OR would have, but you're wheeling in these robots and you're setting them up. Everything is sort of, is it set up to be kind of a moving operation? You wheel in, you wheel out. I mean, obviously you could keep it in there too, but how mobile is Dextra designed to be?
So I'll give you an example. I took a robot. I have a very small office in Cleveland, Ohio. And the simulator we use actually uses the console of the robot. I mean, I took it off a truck myself and wheeled it into an office. Wow. It's incredibly mobile, super easy to use. You know, typically, I think when people use it on a day-to-day, they set up the room for the day and they're running multiple procedures through. This is a robot that can be used in a minor procedure room. It could be used in an outpatient surgery center. Europe obviously doesn't sometimes enjoy the luxury of some of the large ORs we have in the U.S. Mm-hmm. We haven't found one yet that Dextra can't be accommodated in. So it is really a flexible, nimble system when you talk about accessibility.
And what are you offering to the surgeon and to the hospital, the benefits? I mean, keep in mind, you do not have FDA regulations, so FDA approval yet. So how is this designed? What benefits is it designed to provide?
Yeah. So again, we really put it into kind of three pillars. So simplicity.
Yep.
Again, we're focused on two things. One of the things that is really incredible about the system is, as I said, it's done 35 different types of procedures. Mm-hmm. And we know that we can do them really well. So when you think of the complex prostatectomies, partial nephrectomies, we can do all of those. We can do colorectal procedures. We've done them all. So it offers a lot of flexibility and variability in what you can do from an acuity perspective. Again, this open concept, it's the only one on the market, the only robot on the market that has a sterile console interface, which is really unique. We have a single use instrument. Mm-hmm. As well. So when you think about some of the limitations around sterilization, we can offer that. We will later in 25 introduce a reusable line as well. But we believe, and again, from our market research, there's a lot of times, even in big academic medical facilities where terms of these reusable instrument sets delay cases and surgeries, we wanted optionality to, again, increase efficiency. Around this empowers the surgeon again to use what they believe is best for the patient, which is very unique. The form factor is incredibly small. So when I think about some of the other players in the market, Intuitive, Medtronic, these are large form factors. Mm-hmm. Ours is not designed to be that way. So it's minimalistic, and I always say it's not easy to build something this complex and make it simple. But that's what the team has done here. So those are just a few, incredibly accessible. And like I said, not only from a form factor perspective, but we believe in the long term from an economic perspective as well. So a lot of different things and, themes that we believe differentiate ourselves. And quite frankly, if you look at the market leader, we think we complement what they're doing. Mm. We're going to help move site of care. When and if we get U.S. approval, we'll be very focused on this outpatient surgical market.
Okay.
Because of all of the things that I just described. So we think we're going to help make robotic surgery much more accessible for surgeons, hospitals, and patients by the design that we've created here.
And you said you're producing your own instruments as well, and that's the plan to get to your own surgical instruments?
Yeah. So, and again, it's really simple. We have five instruments.
Yeah.
We may add a few more here or there, but we're not going to have a catalog of 100. Like I said, we've done 35 different types of procedures with those five instruments. And in the long run, to really benefit the end customer, this is that choice, right? We're choosing to be very focused on the things and make the things that we do really, really well.
Excellent.
So,
well, final question, or probably next to final question, because I'll likely have a follow up. Where are you? I mentioned FDA approval. Where are you regulatory wise? Where are you commercial wise? Where are you selling? If you're selling, give us an update on that.
Yeah. So I think the team has learned a lot from maybe what we've seen in the marketplace. So we're going to continue to be very selective in Europe right now. We're commercialized in Germany, Switzerland, and France. Mm-hmm. But we're going to be very selective right now. We're driving U.S. indication expansion through clinical relationships in those three countries. And then we're also, hand selecting customers, to prove out that we know we can delight customers will buy our product and we can have what I would call, product that's highly utilized across the indications and procedures that we want. So that's Europe. From a regulatory perspective, we're in the process of working through the MDR process, as I think most people are. And then for the FDA, we submitted our de novo last year. And, I would say we're a healthy way through the process. We've got a great collaborative relationship with the FDA. We're continuing to work really hard to drive to that first indication, which will be inguinal hernia.
And last question, financing. You mentioned, I think you raised around last year. Sorry, I missed the web page. What's your state of financing?
Yeah, it's maybe a little bit more dated than that, but that was, Revival. Mm-hmm. Total amount of that raise was $150 million. So that's from a shareholder perspective, that's our largest shareholder.
But you're well capitalized right now. Do you see yourselves going out in the market anytime soon?
Yeah, we feel really good. We're evaluating our options. Tom, to answer that question, there's not a lot of pressure on us to do it immediately. Our current investors have been very good to us, and we've got some decent runway. But we may inevitably look for the right partners as we, once we get some of these regulatory approvals under our belt. The global commercialization will need some gunpowder, so to speak.
And honest to God, final question: do you have tourists like me come in? Every once in a while and say, and give our opinions on surgical robotics, this being an important year, lots of news going on. To me, it does feel like there's a lot of maturation to the sector. And we talked about this a bit earlier, but how do you view it? You've been in the industry for close to 10 years now, if not 10 years. Do you feel a difference, or is it just kind of business as usual, steady maturation, not any sort of momentum gaining this year?
Yeah, I think there is a momentum. Mm-hmm. You can feel it. I mean, whether it's straight in robotics or med tech in general, mm-hmm. I think there's a bit more activity going on the M&A side. And you can see even different robotic companies in different sectors getting, nice, healthy raises, mm-hmm. FDA approval. So I feel like the energy is really high, for distal motion specifically. Our heads down. We know what we need to do. We've got some big approvals here, in the near term. So we're really focused on maintaining our business, sticking to our plan. But I do feel it, Tom. I really do. I mean, I think the announcement with the census and Storz was an interesting mm-hmm. one. And look, and honestly, the announcement with the DV5 and the standalone lap tower, there's starting to be some crossover in sectors and some new entrants. And, that's obviously bringing another competitor to the visualization market. So I think it's high energy right now, and I love it. Excellent. I love it. I think it's going to bring some fun discussions here in the future.
Absolutely. Well, we'll have some of those discussions at the Device Talks Boston. Very happy you'll be part of it. And thanks for sharing your thoughts today, for being on the podcast.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Once again, join us at Device Talks Boston on May 1st and 2nd. You can talk directly to Greg Roach about his comments today and about what distal motion is working on in the Dexter robot. You'll also get to meet with surgical robotics experts from many other companies, including some that won't be on stage, but many will be in the audience. So it's a great opportunity for surgical robotics, a great opportunity for medtech overall. We'll have a lot of great discussions on non-robotics topics. And you can check all of that out at boston.devicetalks.com. And once again, if you register or when you register, use the code DTWeekly25 and you'll save 25% off the cost of registration. Once again, join us on Tuesday for Device Talks Tuesdays. Subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network so you don't miss any of our podcasts, including the new one I'm currently working on. And that's it. That's a big ask. Share this on social media. Connect with me on social media. Getting a lot of great connections on there. A lot of folks are very kind when I connect and say, oh, I love the podcast. If you love the podcast, please connect right now. Don't wait for me to reach out to you. I will probably get to you ultimately, but would love to connect with you right away, hear what you're up to, and be part of your news feed and have you follow mine more closely. So, all right. Well, that once again is a wrap. Thanks everyone for joining us. And I really do hope we'll see you at the Device Talks Boston on May 1st and 2nd at the Boston Convention and Exhibition Center. Take care, everybody.